From Michigan Radio, you're listening to Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, in for Cynthia Canty. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, you may recall in 2016, a little dark horse candidate for president took to the stage of Detroit's Fox Theater, called Marco Rubio Little Marco, and defended the size of his hands to America. Well, Donald Trump would go on to become president of the United States. Last night, it was the Democrats' turn to overwhelm the Fox Theater and Detroit with their numbers and with jabs at one another. It was night one of two for the Democratic primary debate on CNN. Here to rehash the night and the dark psychic forces that emerged from the debate is Adrian Hemond, partner at Grassroots Midwest and a Democratic strategist. Adrian, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Bill Nowling, partner at Lambert and a former Republican Party operative. Bill, welcome.
Thank you.
You call yourself partisan fluid.
Yeah, I'm partisan fluid.
I really enjoy that. More of us should be, I suppose. Well, let's start there. With one of the few moments of the night that addressed something specific to Michigan, the candidates were asked about the Flint water crisis, and candidate Marianne Williamson had this to say.
I assure you, I lived in Grosse Pointe. What happened in Flint would not have happened in Grosse Pointe. This is part of the dark underbelly of American society. The racism, the bigotry, and the entire conversation that we're having here tonight, if you think any of this wonkiness is going to deal with this dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see some very dark days. We need to say it like it is. It's bigger than Flint. It's all over this country. It's particularly people of color. It's particularly people who do not have the money to fight back. And if the Democrats don't start saying it, then why would those people feel that they're there for us? And if those people don't feel it, they won't vote for us. And Donald Trump will win.
So it's an interesting moment because some say that Democrats are playing too much into identity politics and others say that they aren't enough working on that angle with voters. Adrian, let's start with you. Is this a winning strategy?
Maybe for someone, not for Marianne Williamson, I guess would be my take on that. I don't consider myself qualified to opine on the dark psychic forces piece of that strategy. But in terms of the Flint water crisis, I don't necessarily even consider that all identity politics. Obviously, there was an appeal there. We had an infrastructure problem in this country, and I think it was smart of her to point it out. Unlike a lot of the things that have been talked about in these Democratic debates so far, that's actually something that people can see and feel and touch in their own communities, and there's a lot of it all over America.
Absolutely, but she also got into she ended up addressing specifically reparations, and the question came up about reparations, so they obviously had to address it. She really dug into that, and she got a lot of hits on Google last night, Bill, because of what she was saying. People were holding on to it, but I don't know that it works beyond a primary.
Well, you know, let's be honest about the format that we had here. I mean, it was really a mosh pit of of candidates, and there was, you know, really no ebb and flow or arc to what was going on in the debate. It was a bunch of moderators jabbing one another and goading them into fighting with somebody on the stage to make some interesting TV for 2 hours and 39 minutes, but I wasn't counting. But, you know, I think for Williamson, you know, the thing that struck me about that is that, you know, she was the first one to talk about reparations. And I thought that that might have come up a little earlier, a little, you know, because of all the discussion around race.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's a bit of a stretch to try to always tie Flint with structural racism or with environmental racism. I think those are factors. But, you know, Adrian, I agree with you. You know, there's an infrastructure problem. And for Flint, Michigan, there's, you know, 100 other cities just like it that are ready to go in terms of having that type of infrastructure. So to bring it up, I thought it was smart. But you're trying to differentiate. This is really a battle to see who gets to the next debate. Because mm-hmm. they're going to start cutting people off after this. And I think Marianne Williamson was interesting. It was interesting that she was not sticking to the general talking points of most of the candidates up there. It was refreshing to hear that. She's a little out there for my taste, but she was the number one search candidate post-debate.
Right. I think she was one of the people who sounded fairly human and like she was talking to people rather than constituents. I thought the big winner
in the debate was the pivot, you know, taking whatever question that the moderator asked you And if you're Bernie Sanders and you're answering a question about infrastructure and then immediately saying, that's why we need to have Medicare for all and to move on that. They were really focused on playing to the base and to their particular base, where the battle was between, you know, the hard progressive left and the more moderate center, if there is one, in the Democrat Party. You saw that a little bit more last night. I wonder if you're going to see that a little bit more even tonight. You know, you have Biden on there, and I think Biden, he's the front runner. There's a new poll out today from Quinnipiac that has him as a...
Yeah, he's been ahead pretty much the whole time.
Yeah, and he's opening up a little bit, so they're going to go after him on that.
Adrian, did you have confidence coming out of this first night of two in the debates that you have a good field of candidates that Democrats are working with?
No.
Were you disappointed or disheartened?
I wouldn't go so far as to say disheartened, but definitely disappointed. I don't think that that's all on the candidates. Bill referenced this earlier. The format was atrocious and really didn't give the candidates a chance to shine in a way that I think is meaningful to voters.
But, you didn't get a shine in 2 hours? Not a single shine?
No. I don't yeah. think it was very impressive for any of the candidates, and I think the format had a lot to do with that. The other thing, and Bill raised this as well, most of them were doing a very good job of sticking to their talking points. Marianne Williamson seemed somewhat on the human side, but for the most part, the candidates' performances were pretty robotic, which makes sense given the format that, you know, here's an opportunity to take a pot shot at one of your competitors, ready, set, go. That's not going to lend itself to a conversation or really to connecting with voters in any real way. It's an opportunity to take some shots at the other candidates and try and differentiate yourself. They certainly did a lot of the former, but not much of the latter.
I want to play another moment for you as well. This is Bernie Sanders. The subject of Detroit was brought up, and here's what he had to say.
Well, let us understand, Detroit was nearly destroyed because of awful trade policy, which allowed corporations to throw workers in this community out on the streets as they move to low-wage countries.
That's a pretty simplistic and largely false analysis of what happened in Detroit, but he also pointed out that he won Michigan in 2016. Do you think he could do it again? Bill, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I definitely think he can do it again. I mean, he's the person with the most experience that was on the stage, at least at this level, you know, because he's been there before and he went deep into the primary season the last time around. And, you know, for the progressive left, he still holds a lot of import and sway with voters in that area. They believe him. There's no question in people's mind that Bernie Sanders is a socialist. There was a lot of debate between other people up there, with the exception of Senator Warren, about whether they were really a Democrat or not Democrat.
That was interesting.
Yeah. You're more of a Democrat than I am, and we should be scared of that. And that's normal in the debate. But I think what it comes down to is, you know, this is about not talking. At this stage, it's about not talking yourself off the stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't do anything that's going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. You know, what was it? Vince Lombardi said the forward pass, two out of three things can go bad. When you do that in a debate, it's the same thing. Two out of the three things could go bad. And you just don't want to do any harm to it. And so I think that that's what they were trying to do here. Don't kill myself. Maybe take a pot shot when I get an opportunity to do that.
Right.
But when you have 10 people on the stage and you talk to one person, it's 20 minutes before you get back to that person again.
Right.
That's not a debate. You know, that's, you know, I know what that is.
Yeah, the pot shot is what gets the cheers and jeers anyway in these types of debates.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, and I agree with Bill that, you know, Senator Sanders has got a chance to win Michigan again. I don't think he's got nearly as good a chance as he did last time, partly because he's not up against heads up against such a wretched candidate this time. He had the great benefit of running in a partisan primary against Hillary Clinton. That was always going to go reasonably well for him. I don't think that that's going to be the case this time. He's certainly going to be up against somebody of a little higher quality as a candidate for president, I would think.
Well, we just have a couple minutes left, and so I want to get a take from you guys on what it's going to take for Democrats to think that they can turn the state back blue into their column. Adrian, start with you.
Democrats have got to figure out a way to connect with voters around, like I mentioned before, sort of kitchen table issues, issues that people can see and touch and feel. You know, that can be the environment, that can be jobs in the economy, but you've got to talk to people about things that actually impact their lives and not in the language of sociology. And I think that there's way too much of that going on in the Democratic Party in general right now, but especially in this presidential primary, a lot of these folks are talking the language of sociology, and most people don't have sociology degrees. That's not a conversation they're interested in having.
Right.
I had the same reaction. I had it felt like a faculty department meeting last night.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is a lot of people who are really smart talking about really deep issues, not really paying attention to all the things that they agree on and focusing on the things that trying to get the perfect over the practical. You know, I think what Democrats have to do, it's what any candidate has to do, what Adrian said, you know, you got to connect with voters. But I think especially in this election, you know, Michigan, I tend to think that, you know, the last election was, you know, an aberration when it comes to presidential politics. But because this has been a blue state when it comes to the presidential election, and it's going to go back to being a blue state. I think the bigger issue, though, is what is going to, you know, how are Democrats going to connect? If they're going to beat Trump, they've got to pull in moderate Republicans at some level. And how are they going to do that? And I don't care who it is, whether it's a progressive like Bernie or it's somebody, you know, who's arguing more to the middle. They've got to come up with an issue that speaks to those Republican voters that are looking for a reason to not vote Republican.
All right. Well, we have to leave it there. Adrian Hammond and Bill Nowling, thank you both so much for joining me today, and maybe you'll suffer through another night of debates.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, how billionaires are shaping politics and culture in Michigan and around the nation, that's what we're going to talk about next.
The ultra-wealthy often use their money for good causes, but they often have a particular take on that cause.
Stay with us.